10 millones.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I think the last thought, telling me the way between you and us, I'll try to be quick. And this is the modern dose of IV-1713 foundation. And what I will be presenting is mostly about a job that has been doing in collaboration with Satoru. And it's going to be about detection of thermalite traces in IV-1713 and also the protomotion. So, as you all know, IV-1713 is one of the cosmic ray accelerator prototypes that has been studied in many wavelengths. And we know that we think that it's a collapsed supernova, it is a compact object here in the center. The X-ray emission is completely dominated by synchrotron emission, and people have been looking for any sign of the thermal X-ray emission for decades. And we think that it's interacting with denser material here in the northwest. We have an idea of the distance of about 1 kilopascal wave. It's one of the brightest supernovae in TDD. So that's why we think it's a really efficient accelerator, and it's also very bright in X-rays. But despite all of that, they are mentioning that it's still not open, and although there is no good idea of how old it could be, there's a possible association with this historical supernova, could be something recently debated. We don't know much about the progenitor and the possible mass of the progenitor, and most importantly, we don't know much about the ambient density around it. We know some information about the clouds, maybe the clouds that the shots interact with, but for the ambient density, we don't know much, and that's really a problem when we try to model the TDD part. And so there are different ways in which you can get the ambient density. One is, for example, with protomotion, and people have been doing it with optical lines. But here, the extension is so high that it's a problem, and it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. And we mentioned what the work that we're going to do with X-ray protomotion. Another obvious way to do it, the ambient density, is of course with short interstellar medium emitting gamma X-rays. And we mentioned, I will start with this thermal X-ray emission part. So, why was it so hard to detect it, and why can we detect it now? The first thing is that we try to optimize the region where we could look for thermal X-ray emission. What you see here is a softness map of the entire region in white. You see the contours of the test now. And you see that you have softer emission coming from the center. It could be because we know that the absorption is slightly lower inside, and or because there is some thermal contribution from this center region. So that the region that we decided to observe was specifically on that hotspot of soft emission. And we asked for a dedicated deep superco observation from that region, but most of the detection came from a dedicated observation group for the precession of the CCO, carried out by Jules Albrecht. And we used this observation, not the timing mode, but from the MOS cameras to look for this thermal emission. And also, we take advantage of the off-pointing that were carried out by SUGA2 to have a good estimation of the background. So here's the spectrum that you get from this temporal region. In black, you have XMM, and in green here, you have SUGA2. And in green here, that's the background, and that's the model that we have for the synchrotron emission. And you can see that lying on top of the synchrotron emission, there is really three features of neon magnesium and synchrotron standing out that you cannot reproduce with a simple synchrotron emission. And so there is a clear detection with XMM, and not some bumps, some hints with that also have the same energies. Without XMM, it would have been hard to get detection, but with seeing the same features in XMM and Suzaku, that's quite comforting. So you can see that that's the model with pure hollow, and if you have the thermal components, you can perfectly reproduce those emission lines that you have here, and the model that you need is the one that is in red here. So when you look at the best fitted parameters for that, what you get for this additional thermal component is a rather cold thermal component, almost close to equilibrium, and the most important thing is that you need higher indices, although you can look at the operational strength, because you have, okay. Because, of course, it's really hard to constrain the continuum, the general continuum, because the dominated main is very large synchrotron continuum, but they are consistent with non-solar. And what we are seeing, in fact, is probably ejecta. So we were hoping that we were going to find some shot in the medium, but what we have is ejecta, which is also interesting because, as you can see, with a very low ion abundance, this is compatible with the collapse supernova. There was no big doubt about it, but that's an interesting confirmation. And from the ratio of those different elements, you can have an indication of the mass of the progenitor, and likely the progenitor was not really massive, it was about less than 20 solar. So now going to the other parts. How can you constrain the atomic density if what we have seen was shock ejecta? The other way is to do the proper motion. This was mentioned several times this morning, in particular by Brian. And so in order to find the proper motion, we need to track the very nice shock filament as a function of time. This is easy in Tycho, this is easy in SMP06, this is rather easy in SMP56, but then in energy SMP13, where do we go? People have been focusing on that region, which is not the best for sharp features because it's really messy. And so we decided to focus on the other region in the southeast. And it's also better to focus on the southeast because we've seen that this region, the shock is still expanding in the original cavity covered by the massive progenitor. And here, you are interacting with junk, so you're not touching the original density. So there was an observation in 2002, and we got additional time in 2015. And this is the 2002 observation. This is the 2002 image. And in the red here, you have the edges of the 2015 observation. And I'm going to try to produce a small movie where you can see the 2015 observation, 2002. And so you see some evolution and some, it's not as nice as a friend's movie on type this morning. But definitely we have some proper motion. And so we decided to focus on mainly two regions, this outer region that is here and this inner region that is here, to look for radial profile and scheme them evolving. And so what we did was to make radial profile in those boxes with very small beams using only the MOS camera, using CAS statistics in which you have the 2002 profile, the 2015 profile that is your model that you want here, and then you can shift it like that or amplify it a little bit to correct for anything that we missed. And the result is the following. In blue, here you have the 2002 shock profile from this inner region here. In gray, you have the 2015 observation that you didn't touch, and then the best fitted is the red one that is here. And so you can clearly see that there was a motion here, and look at the scale, that's a pretty big scale here. But when you look at the bigger picture, what we did was not in fact a fitting procedure, but we compute the sigstat for each point of the grid in the shift and to the parameter space. And you can see that for both regions, this is the 1T profile here, the shift that we see is about 8 or 10 seconds for two regions, which in over 13 years is about 0.6 or 0.7 arcseconds per year. So at a distance of 1 kiloparsec, this translates into a distance of 3,500 and about 3,000 kilometers per second. And the reason this one is lower is probably because it's a shock inducing projection. And so it's the same shock field, but it's not the same projected shock field. So the thing is, what can we do about with that shock velocity? You can have an idea of the age. For example, there is this relation with the expansion parameter that relates the age of the remnant with the angular size and the glide speed, assuming some expansion parameter. And as in this house, we really think that the shock is expanding in this original cavity and that it has not yet incorporated dense material. You can say that this extension parameter is bound between what you can expect in the ejector phase and the settle phase, and translate that into an age. And as we'll show you in the next slide, we are probably more in the ejector than in the phase because the density is so low, and we are not yet in the settle phase. So we are closer to that age. Okay. And which tells us that it's probably not compatible with this historical event, which is also confirmation about the paper that we're discussing this association in 2012. So what can we do more to constrain the density? So the game here is that you can use evolution equation like Tudor-MLP to find the age and density that match best just observed angular radius and angular speed. And for that, you need to assume something for the ejecta, the energetic explosion distance. So we're wondering what ejecta mass to choose. So what we tried was to relate the mass of the ejecta to the wind density that we're going to try to find, which is related to the mass. And in fact, in this cavity, you can say that what was originally the star is then split into three components: the mass loss before the explosion, the neutron star in the middle, and the ejecta. And the mass loss here, if you assume that you are close to this border of the cavity, this is can be related to the swept up mass. So in the end, you can have a relation between the mass of the ejecta and the mass in the wind. So this is what you get for different ages and different density. You can see that the higher the density, of course, means the higher the mass loss and the less what's left for the explosion, so the smaller the ejecta mass. And you can see that there is a forbidden zone where in here, if you have a really high density, the mass of the wind will be bigger than the mass of the projector, so you cannot have those densities here. So having this prescription for the mass of the ejecta, so it's probably questionable what we did before, but it's better than just guessing some mass of the ejecta. You can compute the predicted theta over theta dot for different age and different densities, and this in color here, that's the predicted theta over theta dot, and the observed value that we get from the proportions here, so we get the same image as before, because we are still in the ejecta-dominated place. And so for different energy of the explosion, or for different distance that will give you different radius, in fact, and different distance, you can have an idea of the density, and for example, for 1 kiloparsec and 10 to the 51, you see that the density is about 10 to the minus 2. For such a density, such a wind density, the swept up mass will be 4 solar mass, and the ejecta mass goes about 9 solar mass. So we are still in the ejecta radius, and therefore the age is about 2,300 years. So the conclusion, with those two different analyses, we detected thermodynamic spray emission. It was not from the short ISM, but from the ejecta, but we still learned something about the progenitor. And concerning the age and the density, we have this short spin measurement in the southeast that we think is representative of the original cavity carbide progenitor. And we can have an idea of the age. It's not perfect, it assumes something for the ejecta mass, but it's probably not compatible with your historical supernova report from Chinese astronomer. And also that confirms that the density is very low, and that's something that due to the lack of thermodynamic spray emission, people have been placing upper limits that are compatible with this really low density. So it's not directly the density that you have in the bright northwest region. So you probably are in energy 1730, very low density cavity in the southeast and in the east and in the west, a much different density with higher targets. So this has also implications for what we can expect from the gamma rays. And the last slide is, if SN13 is not associated with SN3 and 3, it must have been visible in the past 2,300 years ago. And in -30, this is from Han. That average 1713, it's been expected that it was about magnitude about -4, -5, and you can see it in the Scorpio that the average 1713 is here, and it was 20 degrees, 21 degrees above the horizon. So here, 2,300 years ago, maybe people witnessed that explosion, but we have no records that in that back from those age, and from Chinese astronomer. Also, I think that we don't have many as old observations, but it will be interesting to revisit this regular association knowing that the age is maybe 2,000 years old. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the very interesting discussion. I can follow discussion about the explanation of the project mass. You should be in your slide, you assume that the pumping solar mass.
Yeah,
okay, that's a good start. But what would have to give you to pumping solar mass or maybe solar mass?
So, yeah, you're right that it is. So, in fact, you're right, the draft assumes something for the progenitor mass, and there's a paper by Sanchai et al. Where you look at the size of the cavity, and they say that given the size of the cavity, you need a progenitor that has this mass in order to create such a cavity.
If you change
12, in the paper they say it's between 12 and 16, to get 14. If you change 12 or 16, this is really, this is not going to change.
You may have said this answer, I was missing it. How well is the distance? What is the distance? How well is it known? And what is the foreground of absorption like? In particular, with regard to your estimate of the brightness of the supernova itself. Is that well?
So the distance is not super well constrained. It's half the distance because it's very so far. The distance, it's mostly done with association with the seal cloud. So we say that there is some interaction between the supernova and some clouds. And in CO, you can have some, you know, the velocity of those clouds. So it's a kinematic distance. And the uncertainty on that are half estimated, but in some paper, they was 0.9 to 1.8 gigapascal. And the foreground section, I think the average NH is about 10 to 22. So that's a visual extension of 3 or something, 3.5. So that's one of the reasons in the FESN 2012 paper they were saying that SN393 was too faint in order to be energy 1713, and energy 1713 should have been brighter than described in the Chinese record. So they discussed that as a possible non association.
Any more questions? If not, we will thank Fabio again.
Thank you.